This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today it's a folk music show. And who better to have on it than David Rovics and Ann Feeney, two of the best and most political folk singers in America today and around the world, for that matter. David Rovics and Ann Feeney, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Great to be here, Matt.
Thank you.
Ann, I've never met you before, and David I had here in the studio, I think, 2 years ago or something. So I'll start with you, Ann, and I read that you were a trial attorney at one point.
There you go, dredging up my sordid past. How long can a girl be clean before they quit dragging up the sordid details?
It's not the usual background for a folk singer. How'd you get from there to here?
Well, actually, a career in the arts wouldn't have been an option for people in my neighborhood. My dad was a great believer in education, and he had really wanted to be an attorney himself. So I'm the first child, very compliant, and I aim to please my parents. So I went to law school and graduated from the University of Pittsburgh in 1978. I guess the only time I think about it much, somebody will say, you're never going to get famous that way. And I say, well, the only reason I would ever want to get famous is so they would quit saying that Orrin Hatch is the most famous person to have graduated from Pitt Law School.
Well, maybe you'll have that distinction anyway. Anything better than Orrin Hatch. And so were you always interested in music, though, or in folk music, or was there a pivotal turning point?
Oh, I'm Irish. Everybody in my family sings. All of our family gatherings were always filled with music. And my parents, my dad was a great harmonizer, so my mom would sing all the way home and from family trips or whatever, and my dad would harmonize. And I was very caught up with the idea of harmony singing. I loved it. The first several bands I was in, I was bluegrass and traditional songs that had great harmonies. So,
and you were either a red diaper baby or a red diaper grandchild. I read that you had a grandfather who was a mine worker organizer.
Yes, I'm still finding out. I've got a grant to do some research on his life, and I'm still finding out what an amazing fellow he was. Growing up in Pittsburgh, nobody took it as a great distinction to hear their grandfather was a good union man. I mean, everybody's grandfather was a good union man in my neighborhood. But he's actually quite a hellraiser now that I'm looking into it. I found pictures of him with Mother Jones. He introduced Gene Debs when he came to Pittsburgh to speak. He filed complaints and made formal testimony in front of a federal commission looking into police misconduct during the 1919 steel strike. He's a good guy, so I'm very much enjoying, thanks to all the digitizing that's going on with ethnic and local newspapers. When I did a word search on my grandfather's name, I found 3,900 hits between 1910 and 1939. So I probably have a book percolating around there if I ever have time to write it.
I'm speaking with Ann Feeney and David Rovics, two great folk singers on tour, on their first U.S. tour right now. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor at the Progressive Magazine. And Ann, I saw on your car this sign about the National Healthcare bus tour or car tour or whatever you're doing. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, every July I go out and do a tour on the left coast, but as I was approaching this summer's tour, it seemed like the time was so right to really organize to make it a healthcare tour instead of just a... And last October, Holly Neer had organized a Sing Out the Vote Ohio tour that I was part of. And I modeled it loosely after that, although since I had such a larger thing in mind, I couldn't quite call up musicians who had no health insurance and ask them to come and play for free. So I front-loaded. I made a serious appeal to my email list, and I got about $23,000 in underwriting, so I was able to pay every musician who participated. All in all, 60 musicians rotated in and out of the Sing Out for Single Payer Roadshow. Gary Huck did a fabulous graphic for us, and the Sign Painters Local in San Francisco gave us a 4x10-foot banner to display at all the gigs. And we were trying to get some splendor and pageantry behind it, but altogether we did 36 shows between San Diego and Bellingham in about 20-some days. David was in for several of them. It was great fun. We really got a lot of people working together who hadn't been working together, and energized the single payer activists out there. I still can't understand, you know, what happened to the hope and change? How did we end up where we are?
I think a lot of us are asking that question. Oy, right now.
It's pathetic. But this song I'm going to sing for you is it was a big hit on the show. It's written by a naturopath by the name of Joan Hill, not a pseudonym, Joan Hill from Seattle. We're nursing as fast as we can. We're running with bandages and bedpans. Our patients are sicker, the discharges are quicker, the reasons are slicker why we can't afford more nurses who are nursing as fast as we can. More cuts in nursing are planned. Oh, our load isn't lighter and the staffing is tighter and we're nursing as fast as we can. Your anxiety's legitimate, I'll grant. You've been admitted for a liver transplant. You watch the nurses scurry, everybody's in a hurry. You've just begun to worry that we won't have time for you. Our time is limited, you must understand. We can't do right by you within our budget. Your insurance plan's so tight, you can't even spend the night. You've got it, so we'll send you home to do the best you can. Meanwhile, we're nursing as fast as we can. We're running with bandages and bedpans. Our patients are sicker, the discharges are quicker, the reasons are slicker why we can't afford more nurses who are nursing as fast as we can. And more cuts in nursing are planned. Though our schedule's obnoxious and the pace is preposterous, we're nursing as fast as we can. I feel I must apologize to you. You messed your bed and had to lie in doo-doo. I was very busy, I was running in a tizzy. I over-optimistically thought I'd get back to you, but I had seven other patients too. One of them was bleeding in his pillow. When priorities were reckoned, it was you who came in second. First was all that I had time to do. Meanwhile, we're nursing as fast as we can. We're running with bandages and bedpans. Our patients are sicker, the discharges are quicker, the reasons are slicker why we can't afford more nurses who are nursing as fast as we can. More cuts in nursing are planned. Though infection is spreading and mistakes we are dreading, we are nursing as fast as we can. We worry for our patients, yes we do. They come to us much sicker than they used to. We know we need trained nurses, but the bosses watch their purses when it's patient safety versus profit. We know what they do. Nurses who are registered must go. They hire nurses' aides because they're cheaper. We know for patients' sake this could be a grave mistake. It's a chance they take to save a little dough. Meanwhile, we're nursing as fast as we can. We're running with bandages and bedpans. What's in them is stinking, just like management's thinking, as our standards are sinking, while the risks we take are rising, like the salaries for those at the top. This misallocation must stop. Our superfluous superiors sit upon their posteriors in the comfy interiors of their offices and lounges while we're nursing as fast as we can. We must find a way to demand that patients won't be dying 'cause some corporation's trying to cut nursing as fast as they can. Single payer, friends, the only real plan.
That's Ann Feeney singing Nursing as Fast as We Can from her latest album, Dump the Bosses Off Your Back. Also in studio with me is David Rovix, who's touring with Ann right now. And David, I read shortly after the G20, the post you sent around. It was sent to me by several people. That's when you know something's catching fire on the web. And some of this, the video from G20 and the police brutality was astonishing. I saw the one picture of the kid being just dragged away by guys in military fatigues and thrown in an unmarked car that was driven by a guy in military fatigues. I actually called the Pentagon on that to get comment, and while the PR person there, Colonel, said it was bizarre, she never got back to me with an official comment from the Pentagon what the military is doing in the United States, which is against the law under the Posse Comitatus Act. But there you had it, or at least it sure looked like it. You had a personal experience there too. Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah, I mean, speaking of the military being there, that was, on that Friday afternoon, whatever the date was of the Friday of the G20, I was spent part of the afternoon with Cindy Sheehan and a guy named Josh Smith from Texas and other folks, and there was the Pennsylvania National Guard, and they were in riot gear, in camouflage and riot gear, and they were walking around there back and forth with these massive armored, heavily armored vehicles, you know, and Cindy kept on, she was hanging around the armored vehicle and posing on it and for photographs and asking the Pennsylvania National Guard why this thing was there and rather than in Iraq guarding people like her son. But it was, it was a police riot, sort of really along the lines of similar police riots in Minneapolis in 2008 and Miami in 2003, and pretty much at all the both the Democratic and Republican conventions of the past, well, certainly 2000, 2004, and 2008. You know, and I can't speak personally about ones prior to that. Certainly, it wasn't the first police riot at a convention in 2000 either, that's for sure. I know, I believe Ann was at the 72 convention and can testify to the police behavior there.
Anytime we exercise our First Amendment rights effectively, you can count on a police riot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and you had a family story on that going back to 1919.
That's right.
So there is a lot of history. And David, you wrote about the history there. You said anybody who spent much time trying to exercise their First Amendment rights in the U.S. now or any other time since 1776 knows firsthand that the First Amendment looks good on paper, but it has little to do with reality. That was David Rovics about the G20. And you were clubbed in the back there. What happened?
Yeah, there was. This was at a time when anybody who was on the campus was being randomly attacked, including lots and lots of students who didn't really understand, you know, how threatened they were. You know, I mean, they thought that they were sort of observers, and I guess at some point they start. I didn't see this, but at some point apparently some students started chanting something like go Pitt," or something, hoping they wouldn't be clubbed because the cops would recognize that they were locals. But that didn't work. They got attacked anyway. But they were, yeah, the cops were just attacking everybody, and so I was trying to get off the campus, as were everybody else there, and there was this line of cops, and I was kind of thinking, well, maybe I'll wait till they pass by, you know, but then one of them said, "You go," and so I did what he told me to do, which was to actually run through the line of cops, and not surprisingly, at that point, I was clubbed in the back, but I figured if I didn't run through the line of cops, they'd tackle me for disobeying orders. So,
And Ann, you were there too?
Yes, and I've got to say, after 40 consecutive years of activism, I've been many, many places where tear gas was deployed, but I've always managed to stay out of it, and it was impossible in my hometown during the G20. It was everywhere.
You've got a song, Ann, "Have You Been to Jail for Justice?" that is appropriate, and I wondered if you could sing it. And David,
Let's do you
harmonize on this?
Yeah.
Sure does. I'll tell you, it's so much fun being on the road with David. Aside from his prodigious talents as a writer, he's a great travel companion, and he might have the cutest little girl in the whole world. I'm not sure.
And she's on the road with you. What's her name?
Yeah, Layla.
Oh,
I sang this for Clarence Kalin this morning. He liked it too.
Clarence Kalin is one of the last remaining people from the Abraham Lincoln Brigades.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King or Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. You law-abiding citizens, listen to this song. Laws were made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote, and children worked the mine. The The more you study history, the less you can deny it. A rotten law stays on the books till folks like us defy it. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine. Now the law is supposed to serve us, and so are the police, really. When that system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace. It takes eternal vigilance for justice to prevail. So get courage from your convictions. Let them haul you off to jail. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. Sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marched that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Will you go to jail for justice? Have you been to jail for justice? Oh, you're a friend of mine.
That's Ann Feeney and David Rovick singing, of course, Have You Been to Jail for Justice? David, are you going to write something on that G20 at some point, do you think? Is that going to turn into a song?
I don't know. I already wrote one song about a police riot in very similar circumstances about the Miami protest 2003. So, you know, there wasn't, I don't know. Could happen.
Your latest album, you got two albums out this year. One is a retrospective, Waiting for the Fall, and the other is 10,000 Miles Away. And I just was listening to a bit of it today. There's an incredible song on there about the murder of Dr. George Tiller. And at what point do you decide, yeah, I got to write something about this, or did it brew for a while?
It's kind of random how these things happen. I mean, there's been so many abortion doctors killed in the past, years, and I guess each time I've probably thought a bit about writing a song and hadn't really gotten around to it. But I mean, something about, the fact that he was actually shot in his church. There's a lot of things about this situation that were particularly, I guess in a very dark way, particularly poetic. But then the other just random factor was that I was sitting on a plane for 12 hours and I had lots of time.
Well, that's good use of the time then.
Yeah. I woke up one morning and I turned on the news. It was Sunday morning, they were sitting in the pews. The doctor's wife was in the choir. She was about to sing. She saw it all in front of her, and she heard that awful ring. In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. Dr. Tiller had a family, three daughters and a son. Two girls were both doctors who believed in what he'd done. They knew someone had to do something before they leave this world behind. If it wasn't them, then who would serve the cause of womankind? In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. This is not Afghanistan, it's the heartland, USA, where a girl has to wonder if she'll get acid in her face, where they bomb the women's clinics because the preacher told them to.
where the man there on the TV told them that's what they should do. In the name of God, he held his pistol pointed at the doctor's head. In the name of God, he pulled the trigger. Now the doctor's lying dead. In the name of God. In the name of God.
David Rovics with harmony by Ann Feeney. David's song, In the Name of God, about the murder of Dr. George Tiller. It's on David's latest album, 10,000 Miles Away. You can get it at David Rovics, that's ROVICS.com. And Ann Feeney, you can always find it at AnnFeeney.com. That's Ann with an E. Feeney, F-E-E-N-E-Y.
And I always tell people if they can't, not to try to write down how to spell my name, just go to Google and type in Union Woman Hellraiser. I'm the first thing that comes up.
There you are. She's got a shirt on that says kicking ass for the working class right now. So that'll give you a clue. That and the title of her latest album will give you a clue, too. Dump the Bosses Off Your Back. Now, both of you have been traveling around this country here at the tail end of Barack Obama's first year as president. And Ann, you mentioned what happened to the hope and the change. What are you finding from people? Is there still a reticence among progressives, among activists on this question, and what do you advise?
Well, actually, the thing that's creeping me out the most is even as Obama continues to disappoint, there are still a lot of people who are saying, yeah, but I think he has a secret plan. Yeah, I mean, even Obama's not saying he has a secret plan. So I don't understand how people, you know, if the only pressure Obama is getting is from the teabaggers and the right-wing nuts, what possible reason would he have to try to make us happy? If we don't get out in the streets soon, I think that, I didn't have any huge hopes for him as the savior of the country to begin with, but I know that nothing's going to happen if people don't recognize his conduct for what it is and get out and start demanding an end to the war. And I mean, this healthcare thing is just such a disgrace. I don't think we've ever had, well, actually when they came back because they voted wrong on the bailout the first time and they dragged them back and said, no, vote again. That was a pretty transparent expose of the fact that we're being represented by corporate shills. But
and you know what Barney Frank said about that? He said, sometimes Congress is like a little kid who runs away and then gets cold and comes back. So that, you know, and then votes the right way, I guess, according to Barney Frank. That was an incredible line. David, what's the temperature out there?
Well, it seems to me that there's always been people who, I mean, it's a lot of people. It's a very popular thing going back a long, long time that people really wish that there'd be a benevolent dictator. And then when somebody comes along like Obama, you know, that offers some kind of vague hope of you know, the benevolent dictatorship that a lot of people are looking for, you know, they just, you know, really desperately cling to the idea that things are really going to change. And it just seems to me that really the point about whether Obama is a good guy or not is not particularly relevant because we don't, in fact, live in a dictatorship. And, we don't live in much of a democracy either, but we live in a country where there are two parties that control our lives. And one of those parties is the Democratic Party. And it's a thoroughly corporate monstrosity with, of course, lots of good people voting for it and certainly, you know, a good, wonderful handful of great Democrats in the Congress and lots of wonderful Democrats in local office. But overall, the federal government and the Democrats in the Congress are bought and sold by the insurance industry and the war industry and other industries. And Obama is part of that party, and he doesn't have the capacity not to be if he wanted to. So, you know, I don't know whether he's a good guy somewhere deep inside. He's certainly smart and good-looking and certainly
articulate.
Has, very articulate.
The rhetoric's a lot better. I mean, that was part of it. I mean, it was an enormous relief to get rid of Bush Cheney.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think Cheney was going to go willingly, so it was nice to see that happen. But you're right. I mean, he's, there are huge issues here that he's not about to tackle. Empire, capitalism. I mean, he has no interest and
I'm all
those.
For net neutrality, and I'm glad that happened. You know, and I'm all for the military embargo on Honduras, and of course, 2 months earlier would have been nice. But you know, there's lots of little things like that.
Things. Yeah. I mean, he's done more good things since he got elected, I think, than Clinton did in 8 years. But and certainly, you know, to find a president who can get a subject and a verb to agree is a welcome relief. But
and the Ledbetter was good law to get on the books and things of that nature. It's not all in one direction, but as far as big kind of cosmic changes.
The movement for health care in this country was so strong, and it still is. I mean, out on the street, people are craving health care. And to just watch that, I mean, what's Russ Feingold doing? Why isn't he? There are plenty of people who know better who will privately agree with us that, of course, single payer is the only way to really go. Well, why aren't they saying it out loud? Why are the tea baggers controlling this discourse? It's insane.
Yeah, we should be out there. We only have about 3 minutes left. Can you take us out on a song to get us out the door and 3 minutes, or is there nothing we can do?
Well, there are 300 songs of David's that you can download at his website. They're all wonderful, but let's see. Let's do one we've been doing together.
I march to the Battle of New Orleans at the end of the early British War. A young land started growing and young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore. I killed my share of Injuns in a thousand different wars. I was there at the little big horn. I saw many a medal and I saw many more dying, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the old to send us to the wars, always the young to fall. Look at all we won with a saber and a gun. Oh, tell me, was it worth it all? I stole California from the Mexican land, fought in the bloody Civil War. I even killed my brothers and so many others, but I ain't a marching anymore. I marched to the Battle of the German Trench in a war that was bound to end all wars. I must have killed a million men and now they want me back again, but I ain't a marching anymore. It's always the rich to send us to the wars, always the poor to fall. Look at all we've won with a saber and a gun. Oh, tell me, was it worth it all? I flew the final mission over Japanese skies, set off that mighty mushroom roar. When I saw the cities burning, I knew that I was learning that I ain't a marching anymore. Now the Union leaders screaming as they close the missile plant. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason, call it love or call it reason, but I ain't a marching anymore. I ain't a marching anymore.
Was David Rovix and Ann Feeney singing the old Phil Oakes classic, I Ain't Marching Anymore. David and Ann, thanks so much for being my guests today on Progressive Radio. It's been a real thrill for me having you both right here in the studio.
Well, what fun, Matt. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.